The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday, June 20th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Well, we are 72 days away from the start of Auburn football as we continue the countdown here on the show. I'll update you each and every day. We're counting down to 50, counting down to 25, counting down to a week, and then of course kickoff will be here. So much to go over on the show today. I want to revisit and kind of recap what Uncle T-Bone and I talked about yesterday in the back half of the show, talking about SEC football schedules. And man, looking over those again after getting off the air yesterday, there's just some really tough schedules in this conference, man. And it really does go, and I guess it shows just how good this league is. And it shows just how dominant the SEC has become and the fact that it's harder than it's ever been before. So I want to revisit that for a little bit here today. Also want to get some updates from the College World Series as it is now official. The SEC will win another national title in college baseball. We just don't know who it's going to be. We do have the finals are set for that. So I'm excited to kind of look into that as well, as it'll be Texas A&M and Tennessee will play for the national championship. So we'll look into that a little bit. And then what seems to be the biggest news of the day, the fact that the NCAA has sent out some new proposals to conference commissioners about expanding the NCAA basketball tournament. Yeah, not the playoff, not yet. They will eventually, don't worry. But they're talking about expanding the college basketball NCAA tournament for the men and the women. So all of that and more on the show today. Plus, Chris Gordy will join us, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He's with us every Thursday. He'll be with us coming up in hour number two. You can give me a call, 334-321-1390. It's you and me in the studio today on the airways for the next 2 hours. So give me a call, 334-321-1390. You can also text me on our On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Well, yesterday, in case you missed it, you can always go back and listen to the podcast. But Uncle T-Bone and I here in the studio, we were ranking the SEC football schedules from easiest to toughest, okay? So going from 16, because yes, the league has 16 teams now, we went from the bottom, from the easiest, and we went all the way to the top. And look, these are rankings and they're fun. They're a good off-season conversation as you look towards football season. As we are getting to be less than 3 months away, we're approaching 2 months now for college football to be here. And the good thing about these types of conversations is the fact that you can disagree. All of our rankings can be different. They can all look different, all right? I don't know math very well, but I don't know how many different combinations of a 1 through 16 rankings that you could have. A lot, okay? But what I wanted to get to today is just looking at what the SEC is and how difficult it is and how much difficult, I guess how much more difficult it has become and what that means for the future of the conference for football. Right, and of course, in particular to Auburn. And what I mean by that is looking at winning national championships, making it to the college football playoff, making New Year's Six bowl games, winning the SEC, right? Or how about this? Just having a winning season, because there's a lot of teams in this league moving forward that are going to struggle to do that. I look at South Carolina, a team that I had in my top three, Uncle T-Bone had in his top five, of hardest schedules in the SEC this season. And we looked at it from non-conference and conference schedule, every single game in the book. Look at what South Carolina has to do. Their second game of the year, they go on the road to Lexington. Then the third game of the year, they host LSU. They have to host Ole Miss. They go to Alabama and to Oklahoma in back-to-back weeks. Before they host Texas A&M, they still have to host Missouri. And then, of course, in their end-of-season game, they go on the road to Clemson. You're telling me that that South Carolina team has to figure out a way to put a winning record together? You're telling me that any coach that walks in there not only has to recruit in the SEC, but now you have to win. And I just picked them as an example because I'm looking at my list right now and I have them in the top three at number three. They're going to lose on the road to Kentucky. They're going to lose when LSU comes to South Carolina. They're going to lose when Ole Miss comes to town. They're going to lose at Alabama. They will lose at Oklahoma. And they'll probably lose at Clemson. So that's six losses right there for a South Carolina team and a South Carolina program that's trying to build and become better. You see where I'm getting at here? Take a team like Mississippi State, who has been middle of the ground mediocre in the conference for a while now, since Dak Prescott was there. They're trying to be relevant again in college football. And it's really hard. And for a team like that, it's dang near impossible. Because I have Mississippi State at the fourth hardest schedule in the SEC. And we thought, right, we thought for some programs, and I still think that this is true, we thought for some teams, like Auburn, that with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma and the causing effect of the SEC West and East, the divisions no longer existing, those being wiped off the face of the earth, it was inevitable that some teams, some schools, some programs, their schedule in football would automatically become easier. And Auburn's in that boat. We talked about this yesterday. We've talked about it a lot. About Auburn's schedule this year being easier than it's been in a long time. I have said it. It's the easiest I've seen in my 24 years of life. So Auburn was the beneficiary of that. South Carolina? Not so much. Mississippi State? I don't know. I mean, they don't have to guarantee play Auburn and Alabama and LSU every year, but they're still going to catch a few of them, right? They still have a few of those on the schedule. They play Florida this year. They picked up a road game at Texas. Awesome, right? I'm sure they're really excited for that. And they also play at Georgia. So sure, Mississippi State, they lose Auburn and Alabama on the schedule, which have been horrible for them. I mean, they've had success against Auburn as of late, but historically, no. And so they dump Auburn, Alabama, and they picked up Texas and Georgia. And so for teams like that, it's just so hard to become good. And so you have to start to wonder at what point, and this is kind of going a little deeper than I thought I was going to today, but that's okay. At what point, with all of this expansion and all of the changes that are happening right now in college football and the ones that will continue to happen, right? Eventually, the ACC won't exist. The Big 12 won't exist. The AAC won't exist. None of that's going to happen. It's going to be two. And if they do, they'll exist in their own right, in their own way, doing something completely different from everybody else. Because we all know that we're on our way to two super conferences or just one super league. A super league that has those two conferences in it. And at what point does a school like Mississippi State not benefit from being in the SEC anymore? And probably the more important question, when does the SEC not benefit from having Mississippi State in it anymore? That's a lot to ask. That's a big thought. But it's something that I think could eventually come up. And it's not that the SEC doesn't make money off of Mississippi State. And it's not that Mississippi State doesn't make money off the SEC. And I'm talking about them just as an example. I'm not trying to pick on the dogs here. Both sides are happy right now. But if it gets to a point where the SEC has to have a certain number to be in the Super League that's coming, don't you think they want to have the best of the best in terms of football, where the money's made? We could talk, I mean, there's other conversations to be had with basketball and baseball and all the other sports, but for this particular conversation, I'm talking strictly football here. And so when that day comes and the SEC gets, I don't know, 20 teams for easy math, 20 teams, and they'll join up with the Big Ten and they'll create an NFL-like model, and those 40 teams or however many, whatever the math would be to work it out, those teams will compete and they'll play for national championships. Everybody else, yeah, figure it out. Good luck. You can still be represented with the NCAA if you want to. We don't care. You're telling me that when that day comes, or if that day comes, the SEC's going to look around and say, do we really need the Vanderbilts of the world? Does South Carolina really benefit us? Or could we do a little bit better? Could we maybe find some other program that could make us a little more money, win some more championships, make us even stronger? Right? It's the conversations of way back when the SEC expanded and they added Missouri and Texas A&M, there were a lot of question marks there. There were a lot. There were question marks on when and why those two teams were chosen. A&M made sense. Missouri was a little bit more questionable. Clemson and Florida State have always been in that conversation to be added to the SEC. North Carolina is a great example as well. Those are the teams that everybody's always talked about. And then, all of a sudden, here you go. Here's Texas and Oklahoma. Now they're joining the SEC. And those two make sense as well. But at some point, and you could have this conversation with the Big Ten too. You think the Big Ten, when they have these conversations and they have to make these decisions, that they're going to keep Rutgers around? You really think they're going to keep Rutgers in that conference if they have a choice to kick them out and show them the curb? Yeah, they're going to tell them to kick rocks. Same thing with Maryland and those other schools in the Big Ten. Nebraska, maybe, which is a wild thought, I know, but you get what I'm... Northwestern, you get what I'm saying here. The schools that have benefited from them for a long time and have both parties have been happy, but if we continue to go down the road we're going on, those relationships are going to end. And they'll be ugly. They're going to be ugly breakups. There's no doubt about it. But business is business. And these conferences are all about it. They're all about doing what's best for them. What's going to be the best for them moving forward. And sure, a lot of this is all hypothetical, but how hypothetical is it? Or how realistic could this be in 5 years, 10 years? I think it's more realistic than we think. I think it has a chance to happen more than some of you like to think. And I don't know. I don't have a timeline. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't have any of that. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here. But I look at, and where all this stemmed from was looking at schedules in the SEC and just looking at how some of these teams who have been middle of the pack or even at the bottom part of the SEC, they're only going to get worse. They're only going to get worse. They are not benefiting at all from Texas and Oklahoma joining this conference. There's a group of about 4 or 5 schools and football programs that are really going to hurt now, more than they have been, because of money and NIL and lack thereof, recruiting, lack thereof, and just not flat out not having the talent to get it done on the field. And they can only do so much. But you start comparing. You start comparing what Oklahoma's going to do versus South Carolina, LSU versus Mississippi State, everybody against Vanderbilt. And Uncle T-Bone was even throwing Arkansas in there yesterday. Think about a team and a program like Arkansas. Do we really think that Arkansas is going to be competitive in this new look SEC? I don't know. You tell me. I think it's more likely that those programs fall backwards more than climb the ladder and move forward. Because it takes more talent and more money than it ever has before to be a successful college football team and program. And there's a difference there. A successful college football team has success for 1 year. A successful program withstands that success over a unmarked period of time. And that concerns me. That worries me because there's a lot more changes to come. And I think that means there's a lot more changes to what the conference looks like, the structure of the Southeastern Conference could be. I think you could see a day where some of the oldest schools in this conference that have been here since the start may not be in it anymore. And why would you want to be? Besides, obviously, the money part of it. That's a big reason. That's why you want to be in there. But they may not have a choice. The SEC may have to come to that decision one day and say, look, it's been a great ride. You've been with us since the start. You've been with us a long time. But the end of the road has come. And that's what I'm getting at here. I worry for those teams that are going through gauntlets this season, that are going to go through a gauntlet every season because the schedules got harder, the teams have gotten better, the players have gotten better. Look at recruiting nowadays, man. High school athletes are better than they've ever been. They're bigger, faster, stronger, smarter than they've ever been in the history of the game. And some programs have what it takes to land those kids and be good teams and be good programs and be a competitive representative of the Southeastern Conference. But there's a handful of them that I just don't think have what it takes. We'll take our first break here in hour number one. I want to hear from you. Do you have thoughts on this? Am I crazy for thinking what I'm thinking here? I want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line to call in. You can be a part of the show or shoot me a text, 334-784-1067. We'll have more for you coming up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 1067 app.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and I do have other things that I want to get to today, but some breaking news in the world of basketball on the NBA side of things, and it does have a little Auburn relevancy. The Los Angeles Lakers have found their new head coach. No, it is not Dan Hurley from UConn, right? That saga was fun for the 2 minutes that it lasted. Bruce Pearl's not going anywhere because there's nowhere to go. The Lakers have hired, officially, to a four-year contract, J.J. Redick as their new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. It just broke about 20 minutes ago from Woj at ESPN. Says, quote, J.J. Redick has agreed on a four-year contract to become the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Rob Pelinka offered the job this morning, and Redick has started working on a staff to surround himself with experience. And I bring this up because this is, and has really been, one of the bigger coaching searches in a while in professional sports. And, you know, it's interesting because J.J. Redick has been a broadcaster now. He was on the broadcast crew for ESPN and ABC. I'm sure if you tuned in, if you were tuning in on TV, you were hearing, you would have heard J.J. Redick on the NBA Finals crew with Doris Burke and Mike Breen, the legendary Mike Breen. It's funny, though, because he did a really good job as a broadcaster, and you could tell that he knows his stuff. He's extremely knowledgeable. His basketball IQ is off the charts. Do you want to know why? It's because he used to play. He's a former player. He was a sharpshooter in college and in the pro game. He was a really, really good basketball player. Okay? He was never the superstar, right? He was never a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant type of player. Heck, even at the guard spot, he was never your Chris Paul. He was never your Kyrie Irving. But J.J. Redick was a really good basketball player. And he did his job, and he did it effectively. He knew what he was good at, and he did it to perfection. And it's no secret, if you're on social media or if you're into the podcasting world, that J.J. Redick has had a podcast with LeBron James for quite some time. And those two, the podcast is good. I recommend you go and listen to it. It's two dudes who are legends of the game who sit down and talk about basketball. It's really interesting. But people were starting to kind of question whether the Lakers would actually go after him. Then the reports started coming out that they were going after him. And then a lot of people were concerned, and some people thought it was inevitable that they were going to hire him because of the LeBron James relationship. And we all know how LeBron has become a meme in terms of him controlling teams and being a general manager on the floor and that type of thing. And so people were really questioning whether they would actually do it. And we understand, and we know that the Lakers wanted Dan Hurley. Like, that's a fact. They wanted Dan Hurley. And Dan Hurley told them no. And they went after Dan Hurley because he's been a coach before. He's actually been a coach for quite some time. And he's really good, in case you haven't noticed. Dan Hurley is a really good basketball coach. And there's a lot of risks with J.J. Redick because he's not been a coach at this level. He's not been a coach really at all for college or professional or anything like that. I'll be honest, I don't know if he's coached any AAU teams or anything like that. He may have some kids that he's coached, whatever. But in terms of taking over an NBA franchise, the guy doesn't have that level of experience. And they hired him on a four-year deal. And I'll be honest, I like the hire. I do. I like it. He's a young guy. He hasn't been a coach before. And I'm just impressed that an NBA team, for the first time in forever, didn't go get some previously fired reject from somewhere else. I've had that rant to you before, where professional teams, especially the NBA and the NHL, they love hiring previously fired coaches. I don't understand it. They have this weird mentality of, oh, you just got fired over there because you couldn't win enough games? It probably wasn't you. Why don't you come over here and we'll see if we can make it work? And guess what? It typically doesn't happen. It typically doesn't work. Oh, you just got fired? Oh, well, we just fired our coach. What a coincidence. Why don't you come and coach for us? I'm sure it'll be different over here. You can help us. You can fix it. No, they can't. So good for the Lakers. Good for Los Angeles for hiring a guy who's brand new to the game in terms of coaching. Is it a risk? Absolutely. It's one of the biggest risks. And this isn't the Detroit Pistons, right? This is not a team that isn't a big deal. This is the Los Angeles Lakers, who, by the way, still have LeBron James on the roster and are in the process of trying to figure out who they're going to draft coming up in just a couple of weeks. A week and a half, I think. So, yeah, this is a big hire, and it's a huge risk. But people, and I've already seen it on social media, they continue to say that the Lakers hired a podcaster. They hired a broadcaster. That's not true. They hired a former player. They hired a former legend of the game in J.J. Redick, who is probably smarter than most players that have been in the NBA. And that's no slight to them. That's a compliment to him. So good for the Lakers. Now that's done. That saga's over with. And we'll see how it goes. I've seen people trying to predict already how long he's going to be there. I have no idea. I don't know. But I think it's interesting. And we'll see how LeBron and his relationship work out. and how JJ, as a younger coach, can kind of relate to the grown men he's going to be coaching there in Los Angeles. Really interesting news. Breaking news. JJ Redick hired as the new Lakers head coach. We're 30 minutes in to hour number one. We have some intriguing college basketball news to get to when we come back.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Appreciate you being here with me on ESPN 106.7 on a sunny, hot Thursday afternoon here on the Plains. Well, news today from the NCAA. I know, our favorite group in the world on this show, especially if you listen to this show, you know my love and respect. Cannot forget that. My love and respect for the NCAA. They have sent a proposal, and actually a couple of them. I guess one proposal that has multiple plans in it. An article from ESPN earlier today says, quote, "The NCAA has presented a plan to Division I conference commissioners that would expand the men's and women's basketball tournaments by 4 or 8 teams alongside an option to leave each field of 68 teams," a source confirmed to ESPN on Thursday. It goes on to say, the proposals were outlined to the commissioners this week by NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball Dan Gavitt and NCAA Vice President for Women's Basketball Lynn Holzman. Under the proposal, expansion of the 68-team field included both 4- and 8-team models. The NCAA would keep its 64-team bracket, but would add play-in games involving the number 10 through 12 seeds. How do you feel about that? 334-321-1390. Give me a call or shoot me a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. The NCAA is trying to expand the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament, March Madness. They're trying to extend it. They're trying to expand it and add more teams. It's been 64 for a while, and I know that there have been expansions in the past, and it has grown as the years go on, right? You had the addition of the first 4 that happens up in Dayton, so technically it is 68 teams that get to the NCAA tournament. They are a part of March Madness. It's written right there on the floor where they play at UD Arena in Dayton, Ohio. And I understand that it has been that way for a while now. But the NCAA tournament is such an interesting conversation because so many people have different opinions on this. I think we can all agree. And if you disagree, please let me know. I don't think I've ever met somebody that doesn't enjoy watching the NCAA tournament. As a sports fan, I don't think I've met any other sports fans that don't enjoy watching the NCAA tournament. I'm not saying that everybody's diehard fans. I'm not saying that everybody sits and watches every single game starting in the first 4 and calls off work and sets up 4 TVs and watches it all the way through to the national championship game. But it seems to be that universally, the NCAA tournament is exciting and is accepted and enjoyed by all because it's just so crazy. It's just so fun and it's unpredictable. It's madness, right? That's what it's called. You have people that don't watch sports at all will come out of the woodworks, will just come out of nowhere and fill out a bracket because it's fun. They'll fill out a bracket based off their favorite mascot or the color of the team. Right? You have people that fill out millions and millions, hundreds of millions of brackets every year in offices across the world. Across the country, I guess, but you get what I'm saying here. The NCAA tournament is really, really special. It's really special and it's a lot of fun. But when you start to break it down and you look at who wins the NCAA tournament, there's a handful of teams and there's a handful of qualifications that it takes to win the NCAA tournament. And I'm not saying you have to have these beforehand to win, but what I am saying is you start looking at past national champions and they have a lot of things in common. They aren't the bottom of the bottom. They are not the 64th team in the tournament, the 65th team in the tournament, the last team in the tournament. They aren't those schools. They aren't those programs. You have to have the players. You have to have the facilities. You have to have the schedule. You have to have so many things to A, get to the NCAA tournament, and then win the six games it takes to win it all. And where I'm going with this is I like the NCAA tournament as it is, but I don't think it needs to be expanded. I don't think there needs to be more teams. Because let's just call a spade here. Let's just be real and tell it like it is. If you expand the NCAA tournament from 68 to, 72 or 76 is what they're looking at. If you expand it to that, do you really believe that the 76th best team in college basketball deserves a shot to win a national championship? I'm not asking you if you think they can win it. I'm asking if you think they deserve to have a shot at winning it. What has that team done? The 76th best team in college basketball? Heck, even the 68th team in college basketball, you make the argument that they shouldn't be there. Now, if you win your conference, sure, I like it, that's fine. You win your conference, you're in. Let's go. But for a team that's borderline 500, and because you play in the SEC, you make the tournament, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right. You shouldn't be able to play for a national championship. That doesn't happen in other sports. Not that much. Not that big. And so I may be coming off as harsh here, and I may be in the minority. I don't know. But let me say it this way. I understand why they're wanting to do this, and I'll get to that in a second. But I disagree with it. I don't think it is necessary. I think it's pointless. I think it's a money grab. That's what it is. It's a money grab. The NCAA is trying to add more teams so they can add more games, which all bring in more money. It's not hard. It's not hard to figure out why they're doing it. Do you really think that the NCAA is sitting there when they were putting this together and they sent it out to all of these conference commissioners around Division I, they said, we want to add 4 or 8 more teams because we really just want to give those teams a chance to be a part of it. We really want to make it even more fair for them, and we want to allow them the opportunity to be a part of something special. Give me a break. They did it for the money. They did it for the games. They did it for TV and radio and media. And the coverage, because they're greedy, like everybody is. If you listen to this show, you know what I tell you all the time. What's it all about? It's about the money. And that's what this is. And sure, you could be, and there's a lot of you, I'm sure, and I'm not saying you're wrong, that you're in the camp of more games are better. Flashback to the bowl game conversation, or go over to the bowl game conversation. It's the same thing. It's the same conversation that we're having right here. Right? Some people think that having 50 bowl games and teams that are 4-8 should be in a bowl game because more college football in December is good. I disagree. I don't think so. I don't care to watch a team that's 5-7 play in some game on December 8th. In the middle of nothing, right? I don't care. I don't think that's good. I think it's bad, actually. I think it's bad for the game, bad for the sport. But they do it because you get more money. And enough people watch it, they'll sell advertising, and all is well. It's the same thing here with the NCAA tournament trying to expand. I guess there's no harm in doing it, right? I mean, those teams will make it. And look, this all has to be voted on. This hasn't officially happened yet. Let me make that clear here. This has not officially happened. It's just a proposal that the NCAA sent out to the commissioners of D1 conferences that they want to expand the NCAA tournament for the men and the women's. And they do believe, it goes on to say in this article, that if they do extend the men's, they would most likely do it for the women's tournament as well. I don't think there are enough good reasons to do it other than we want more teams because we want more games because we want more money. And if somebody can give me a better reason than that, then please, I'm all ears. And I'm not talking you particularly, but anybody, give me better reasons for them doing it than this right here. If you're for more teams and more games because it's more fun, that's great. But I look at it from the championship perspective of, this is about crowning a national champion. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget that the NCAA tournament, the college football playoff, the College World Series, those are created and those exist to declare and crown a national champion in college athletics. That's why they're there. That has been forgotten. I think that's been lost because, guess what? ESPN, at the end of the day, they don't care who wins because they're going to get theirs. NCAA, same way. But I do. I care. I care who wins, and I care how they got there, and I care about the process. Because the NCAA tournament is supposed to be crowning the best team. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do is declare a national champion. And we've had the discussion, and many people have before, and it will be one that's ongoing forever. Is the NCAA tournament the best way to declare the college basketball national champion? It's not, in my opinion. I don't think it is. But I don't want it to go anywhere because I love it. It's some of my favorite times of the year is March in the NCAA tournament. But when you start talking about, okay, we need to figure out who the best team is, that's why we're playing, that's why we're doing this, that's why you start back in November and you play a whole regular season and then you qualify for postseason play, we are trying to crown a national champion. And I just feel that that gets, I don't know, diluted maybe if you expand it and add more teams and give more teams an opportunity. Because, you know, we have this point of view in the college football playoff, right? That's a big argument is, okay, do 12 teams really deserve a chance to win it all? Does the 12th best team in college football have a chance to win it all? Maybe, probably. More so than the 76th team in college basketball. Give me a break. But as we continue to see this trend, college football is going to do the same thing. If you think it's going to stay at 12, I got news for you. It won't. It didn't stay at 4, did it? And I promise you it won't stay at 12. This is ongoing news, and it's got to be voted on. It's got to be adopted. And I really don't know what's going to happen. I haven't seen or heard really the perspective and the opinions of the commissioners and the conferences since this came out. My assumption is that it'll be adopted, especially by the smaller conferences, because that gives them a chance to get more teams in the tournament, get their teams on TV, get their teams on radio, get their teams in the spotlight. That's what you're trying to do as a school, as a conference. And so, yeah, I'm sure they will vote it in. I will disagree with it. I won't like it. But at the end of the day, I always have to go back to, what does it hurt? Does it really matter? Not really. The best are still going to win. The best teams in college basketball are still going to emerge over time, right? The UConns of the world are still going to compete for national championships. The Blue Bloods are still going to run it. The new bloods like Auburn and Alabama are still trying to make it to the top, and they will always be surging to get to the top. And if they get there, they'll still be there. But the teams that are going to be benefiting from this, from the tournament expanding to whatever they vote on, 72, 76, 100, who cares? Those teams are never going to win national championships. They're just happy to be there. And so at the end of the day, does it really matter? I guess not. I just think it waters it down a little bit. I'd rather see it be less. I'd rather see it be half of what it is right now. But we already know that's never, ever going to happen. We'll take our final break here in hour number one. I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the possibility of the NCAA tournament expanding to a lot more? Give me a call, 334-321-1390. Shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. You can tell I'm fired up, I'm passionate, I'm having fun on a Thursday afternoon. I'm glad you're with me, and I want to hear from you. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Again, appreciate you being with me. Coming up in hour number two at 3:30, reminder, Chris Gordy will be with us, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, your daily podcast on all things Southeastern Conference. So be sure to stick around for that. That'll be at about 3:30. He'll join us. We'll go over everything going on around the SEC, including the College World Series that is now down to the final two. Yes, as of yesterday. There were three games, the triple header. There was a little bit of weather moving through Omaha early in the week, and so some of the games got moved around, but Tennessee beat Florida State yesterday to move on to the championship series. Florida, in what was probably the upset of the tournament, maybe the win of the tournament for any team, they beat Kentucky, who was the story of college baseball this season. If you kept up with that, you knew that that Kentucky team, who ended up being 46-16, that was a phenomenal run by that squad. And I said this to a buddy yesterday, that's a disappointing end for that Kentucky team. They were very likable. Had a lot of talent, came out of nowhere, one of the best road teams in college baseball this season. And yes, they made it deep into Omaha and had a chance to play another game to get to the national championship. They were just a couple of wins away. But that's still, I feel, a disappointing end to what was a magical season. They should not be disappointed in the end, right? Because nobody predicted that Kentucky team to do that preseason. But I hope you get what I'm saying here. They're going to be hurting for a while, but once they get over that and kind of accept it, they're going to be able to look back and say, wow, what a crazy good team that was for the Kentucky Wildcats. So Florida beat them, and not just beat them, they jumped on them early, and they took them down 15-4. So Florida dominated them in the early afternoon, and then Florida had to turn around and play another game last night. They played Texas A&M. And that was an A&M team that was just more refreshed, more ready to go. Florida having to play two games in the same day. Same afternoon almost and into the night. Texas A&M beat Florida 6-0 in that game. And so it is down to the SEC. We will have another SEC national champion. It's Texas A&M and Tennessee. Best of three series. It starts on Saturday. A&M playing Tennessee. Tennessee favored in this game. The line set at about 160. So that'll be 6:30 Saturday night on ESPN. And Tennessee looking to finally break through and get that win with Tony Vitello, right? They're trying to get that national championship and add on to the SEC baseball national champion run. I mean, it really is something wild to see. The run that the Southeastern Conference has been on, we continue to go back and talk about the addition of Texas, Oklahoma. That's exciting. But man, just look at the national champions you've had in the last decade. You had Vanderbilt a couple of times. You've had Florida in there, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. Like, you've had this conference just dominate college baseball. And now you have a chance, and you will. It's guaranteed to do it again. It'll either be Tennessee or it will be Texas A&M. That game and that series will get underway Saturday night there in Omaha. Hour number one in the books. I'm fired up today. I don't know why. Maybe it's a Dr. Pepper or something. I don't know. I got to stay off that. Doctor says stay away, but that's all right. We'll keep going. Hour number one in the books. Stay tuned. We got a lot coming up in hour number two. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Who knows what we'll get into here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Guess you'll have to stick around and find out. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. If you missed any of hour number one, had a lot of fun conversations there. We talked about the NCAA tournament wanting to expand, a note from the NCAA earlier today, a little bit of College World Series, an update with Omaha as the National Championship Series is now set, and a lot more in that first hour. So if you missed any of it, you can go and find the podcast later on today. I will post it today, I promise. I'll post that today. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also search On the Line on any of your podcasts platforms, and you should be able to find it there as well. Coming up here in this second hour, Chris Gordy is going to join us from Locked On SEC. He'll be with us in about 30 minutes, talk about all the things around the Southeastern Conference. We'll get his thoughts on the College World Series, also some recruiting updates around the conference, and get his thoughts on some of the scheduling conversation that we had yesterday with Uncle T-Bone. So that's coming up in about 30 minutes. Until then, though, phone lines are open. You can give me a call, 334-321-1300. You can also shoot me a text in the On the Line text box if you want to shoot me just a quick comment, question, anything like that. And that number is 334-784-1067. A reminder that the second hour of On the Line each and every day here on ESPN 106.7 is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. And you can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate the Orthopedic Clinic bringing you the second hour from 3 to 4 o'clock each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I found an article, and it's really interesting. It's actually on 24/7 Sports, and it was written a couple of weeks ago, so I think it's still up to date, and I believe it is. It's actually win totals for the SEC and the Big Ten teams put side by side based off of the number, right? So they paired up all the teams, and whoever had the same, they listed them just from bottom to top. And really intriguing things here, and may have to get Chris to comment on this when he joins us in a little bit as well, about just the projected win totals for the SEC and the Big Ten. These are via FanDuel, the FanDuel Sportsbook. And so, I mean, different sportsbooks I know have varying odds and lines and things like that. But we'll run with this for now. They're pretty standard, especially with win totals, since, you know, a difference in one sportsbook to the other would mean a whole extra win or a whole extra loss. Like, that's kind of a lot. So we'll take this and run with it. It's really intriguing. It is. And just kind of starting from the bottom and working our way up here. And I want to know if you agree, disagree, if you think it's spot on for any of these teams. And yes, we will dive deep into Auburn. Don't you worry. So you can shoot me a text, 334-784-1067. And it kind of goes in line with the schedule conversation we had, because you look at what the SEC and some of their win projections are, and it starts out at the very bottom, man. For a team that I have having a top five hardest schedule in the SEC, FanDuel has Vanderbilt at 2.5 wins. 2.5 wins for the Vanderbilt Commodores. That's tough, man. That's tough. And if you were here with me a year ago, you were a part of what I thought was going to be a fun ride, what ended up being a pretty disappointing ride, to say the least. I projected Vanderbilt to make a bowl game last year. That didn't happen. I projected them to get 6 wins, and they let me down. But man, to have a betting line of 2.5 wins, 2.5. That's not even winning all your non-con games if you're Vanderbilt. That's dirty business, man. That's dirty from FanDuel. We talked about their schedule yesterday. They open up with Virginia Tech, Alcorn State, and at Georgia State. Then they have all but one more non-conference game in there. So their non-conference games are Virginia Tech, Alcorn State, Georgia State, and Ball State. I mean, they can win at least 2 of those. And then you have to win one more, and boom. That's all you got to do. All you got to do is beat Georgia State on the road. So that's what they're telling me, because they'll beat Alcorn State and Ball State at home. They're telling us that Vanderbilt's going to lose to Virginia Tech at home and also lose on the road at Georgia State. That's brutal. And then they play a miserable schedule in the SEC: Missouri, Bama, Kentucky, Texas, Auburn, South Carolina, LSU, Tennessee. Just for fun, I'll take Vanderbilt over. And maybe we'll do this as we go, and maybe do another episode with this where we do actual win totals and we'll pick over-under. We did that a year ago, but I'm just kind of going through reacting to some of these. So Vanderbilt not getting any respect as usual. Mississippi State actually paired up with Purdue and their win total at 4.5, which it just seems low for Mississippi State. But when you start looking at that roster, you start looking at the schedule, you start looking at all the question marks there in Stark Vegas, 4.5, maybe a little generous. That's giving them non-conference wins and an SEC win somewhere. So we'll see what that ends up. Here's where it gets interesting. In the SEC in particular, Florida and Arkansas paired together with a win total of 4.5. I don't think that's where you want to be if you're Billy Napier going into a make-or-break, do-or-die season as the head coach in Gainesville. I don't think you want to be out in Vegas with the odds and the line of your win total being 4.5. Yikes. Does that give Florida fans any confidence? I doubt it. I don't think so. And I don't have to tell you how much pressure is happening and is on Billy Napier down in Florida this season. And for their win total to be less than 5, not even flirting with a bowl game, they've got it at less than 5, sitting at 4.5 for Florida. That's brutal, man. But it has to go to the schedule, and that's why. We all agree Florida has the hardest schedule in the SEC this year. But 4.5 just seems low. It seems low to me, but I don't know, man. That's scary if you're a Florida fan. If you're in Gainesville or listening somewhere and as a Florida fan, I I didn't give you any confidence today, so apologies about that. Arkansas right there with them at 4.5. I think that's probably realistic. They wouldn't tell you that, but I think it probably is. I just don't think they have the horses, man. I really don't. I don't think they've got the horses to make it happen. So they're also paired up with Michigan State out of the Big Ten at 4.5 wins. You continue to move through here at 5.5. There's actually no SEC team sitting at a projected 5.5 win total, but you do have Northwestern, Minnesota, and Illinois. I am not going to sit here and comment acting like I know a whole lot about Northwestern and Illinois football right now, because I don't. Okay. We continue looking on, though, at There are 5.5 teams at 5.5 for the SEC. South Carolina is an SEC team projected at 5.5 wins, paired up with a newcomer of UCLA, Indiana thrown in there as well. South Carolina at 5.5. I mean, yeah, that's about right. They do have a tough schedule, and that gives them the opportunity to make or miss a bowl game, and that's where FanDuel's got them right now. That's where Vegas sees South Carolina. They see them as a borderline bowl game team. And with the talent over there, given whatever the case may be, right, with all of the changes and the want and the need to win in South Carolina, yeah, I think you could put them as a borderline bowl game team. That's fine. I could accept that, I guess. Couple of teams that sit at 6.5 wins projected in the SEC. Kentucky sits in there with Rutgers and Maryland from the Big Ten, along with Wisconsin at 6.5. And I want to stop there for a second, because Wisconsin continues to come back around in our conversations because of who they host early on in the season, right? Alabama making a trip to Madison, Wisconsin. And I have to think, and I have not looked at Wisconsin's full schedule, but you have to think, and I'll pull it up right now as we're talking, you have to think that if Wisconsin can beat Alabama in that early matchup, that 6.5 win total will jump immediately. There's no shot that Vegas is allowing Wisconsin to have, and they're not counting that win right now. I just don't think you can do that. They open up with two cupcakes, Western Michigan, South Dakota, snore, and then they host Alabama in week 3. They play at USC, they play Purdue, at Rutgers, blah. Oh, this schedule's so ugly. They do play Oregon, that's pretty cool. Look, I'll go ahead and say it. Not knowing a ton about this Wisconsin team, they'll have more than 6.5 wins. And if they can beat Alabama, that number will jump significantly, probably to 8 wins for Wisconsin, because not only would you get the one for beating Alabama, I think you'd probably get another one if you're good enough to beat the Crimson Tide that early in the season. Here's the one that a lot of you are going to be interested in. According to Las Vegas and FanDuel Sportsbook, this is from 247 in an article, Iowa is projected at 7.5 wins, and so are your Auburn Tigers. They have Auburn projected at 7.5 wins right now for the 2024 season. Do you agree with that? Do you think that that is accurate? I'm curious. I think for Las Vegas, and you have to remember that that's who we're talking about here. This is not an Auburn fan. This is not an Auburn sports talk radio host. This is not an Auburn beat writer. This is not somebody that covers Auburn and wants Auburn to be successful. These are people that are trying to make money on people betting and gambling. And if you know anything about betting lines, they want John Q. Public. They want them to go 50-50. They want half the money on one side and half the money on the other, because then they have a guaranteed big win. That's how it works. That's how Las Vegas runs. There you go. You learned something new today. So they set the win total for Auburn at 7.5, because realistically, yeah, it can be 8 wins this year. Heck, it could be 9 wins this year for Auburn. But if things go wrong, we've talked about the schedule being easier than it's been in the past, but it's still not considered easy to me. Yeah, things can go wrong. You could have a 6 or 7 win season, and it would fall under this. As I mentioned We will do an entire episode picking our over-under win totals for SEC teams this year. I'll go ahead and give you a sneak peek. I'll go ahead and give you my answer for Auburn. Take the over. Take the over. Auburn's winning more than 7.5 games. They will be an 8-win team this season. Auburn will be an 8-win season, an 8-win team this year. I believe that. And I've told you that that should be the expectation. You, the Auburn fan, should expect that this year. Because 7 wins this season is a disappointment. With the schedule, with the talent, with the hype, 7 wins is a disappointment. 8 wins should be the expectation. And that should be the expectation in year 2 regardless. Regardless of how last year went. And it has to look the right way. Right, we've talked about how it has to show, there has to be some progress, there has to be some promise, there has to show some form of getting better and planning for the future and showing that the team and the program for Auburn and Hugh Freeze and this staff and recruiting and the current players, all of that is getting better. That's what has to be shown in year 2. And I think that comes with 8 wins. And again, to look at the schedule, it's not hard to find 8 wins. I think even with the team last year, you could flirt with 8 wins in this schedule. And the team this year is going to be leaps and bounds better than it was a year ago. I struggle to not find 8 wins on this schedule. I've told you Auburn starts 4-0. I believe that. They have to play well. They have to do their thing. They can't go into it thinking they'll be 4-0. But if they show up and handle business, there should be no stress in starting 4-0. So then, boom, you're halfway there. Oklahoma, coin flip. Georgia, probably a loss. Missouri, coin flip. Kentucky, because it's on the road, coin flip. Vanderbilt, that's a win. All right, there's 5. Louisiana Monroe, bam, there's 6. A&M, probably a coin flip right now. And then at Alabama, I think that's a coin flip. And so you look at it, and I counted what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 coin flip games, a.k.a. 50-50 games, and 6 wins that I think Auburn should have, no doubt about it. All you got to do is win 2 of the 5 50-50 games, and you've got 8 wins. Does that seem impossible to you? Does that seem undoable? Does that seem, is that an unreachable goal? Is that a peak that this team can't get to? I don't think so. I don't think that's crazy to say. I really don't. I think 8 wins with previous schedules may not have been a gimme or a guarantee or an expectation or a demand. But it should be for Auburn this year. And so when we go through and we start picking and we give our predictions on over-under with the win totals for all 16 SEC squads, I don't know when we'll do that, but it'll be soon, I will have Auburn as the over. I will take Auburn with the over. Because I think if Auburn goes under, and Auburn is a 7-win team, oh my goodness, if they're a 6-win team, then things start to get a little heated. Tensions start to rise. People like you start to get concerned. And understandably so. And that should be the case. That should be how it's done. That should be how it goes. So yeah, take Auburn over 7.5. That's the only one I'm going to give you. That's the only prediction I'm going to give you right now. But Auburn over 7.5 wins should happen. And you should feel pretty good about it, I think. We'll take our first break here in hour number 2. I want to continue going through the win totals projected for SEC Big Ten teams this season, this fall, for college football teams. Because coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, he's going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on this, scheduling, College World Series, and a whole lot more. But you'll have me for one more segment, you and me, when we come back as we take our first break in hour number 2 here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We continue looking at the projected win totals for the SEC and the Big Ten in college football this season, given to us by FanDuel Sportsbook. It's an article written on 24/7 Sports. A few weeks ago, it was written by Brad Crawford there. You can check it out, 247sports.com. And we were looking through projected win totals, and we got caught up in talking a little bit about Auburn at 7.5. And I told you straight up, Auburn should be more than that. You should take the over if you are into that type of thing for entertainment purposes only. I would take Auburn over 7.5 wins, and I will when we make our official predictions. Other teams that are on this list, Washington and USC. Yeah, those are Big Ten teams now. I'll continue to remind you because I have to remind myself at times. They have a 7.5 win total as well. And so does Nebraska and Oklahoma. And Oklahoma's an interesting one because of the brutal schedule that they got handed in their first year in the SEC. I just don't know if I see more than eight. I don't know if I see eight wins on that schedule. I just don't know. They take tough road trips to LSU, to Missouri. They, of course, play Texas neutral site. They come here to Auburn. Their non-conference schedule is not even a cakewalk. So Oklahoma is going to have some work to do if they want to get over a 7.5 win total. Here's one that I know Uncle T-Bone would get fired up about if he was with me today. He is not. He'll be back on Monday. He would get fired up about Texas A&M having an 8.5 win total this season because he kind of dogged on A&M a little bit yesterday, saying he doesn't think they're that good. He just doesn't think they're good. And 8.5 wins, even if you hit eight, even if you go under, that's still a solid year in the SEC, but they're projecting that they could go even more than that. They could get to a 9-win season. Could this A&M squad, games like Notre Dame at Florida early, still playing Arkansas, you play LSU, you play at Auburn, and you play Texas. I will say, some of their games are not bad. McNeese, Bowling Green, I don't think the Arkansas game is bad. Okay, there's three probably. At Mississippi State's four. At South Carolina should be five. New Mexico State should be six. So, I mean, you win. You start winning a handful of games. I don't think the schedule's all that difficult for Texas A&M. I put them at 13th in my rankings yesterday as the fourth easiest schedule in the SEC. So having A&M at 8.5 projected wins, I don't think it's all that crazy. You continue moving down. How about Missouri and Ole Miss both being projected their over-under win total 9.5? 9.5 for Missouri and Ole Miss. I'll say this. I'll make a prediction. I'll make a bold prediction. One of those two teams, either Missouri or Ole Miss, who I said have the two easiest schedules in the SEC, so I'm taking a stab here. One of them will go significantly under that projected win total, and I mean by two games or more. Why do I say that? Have no idea. Just a feeling. Just a feeling. I think Missouri or Ole Miss will go two games or more under their projected win total of 9.5, and I think it happens. You also have Penn State from the Big Ten, Tennessee from the SEC with 9.5 projected wins this season. That seems a little high for Tennessee. 9.5 wins seems a little high on a projected line for the Vols this season. And their schedule is not hard. We looked at it yesterday. It's not that bad, okay? They should start 3-0 easily. They do open up SEC play on the road in Norman at Oklahoma. So that's exciting. That's going to be a wonderful welcome for Oklahoma to the SEC. And I'm not saying they're going to lose or win. I just think that's a great game. That's an awesome matchup. And Tennessee's schedule isn't brutal. They do play Bama, but they get it at home. They play Kentucky, but they get it at home. They play Florida, but they get it at home. Their toughest game this year is at Georgia, which, I mean, they'll lose. But other than that, I mean, they don't make very many road trips this season. At Vanderbilt, okay. At Georgia, loss. At Arkansas, not bad. At Oklahoma, that's not fun, but it's winnable. So maybe it's not. Maybe 9.5 isn't all that crazy for Tennessee. It just depends on what the quarterback play looks like. Depends on if they can get that offense rolling again. And if they can start flirting with 9.5, 10 wins, look out. I think Uncle T-Bone said this yesterday. Tennessee could be a dark horse for a college football playoff. LSU at 9.5 wins as well. That's intriguing. That's interesting. That would be big for Brian Kelly and LSU if they could be right there flirting with a double-digit win season again. And then I think if LSU is a double-digit win team from the SEC, you're looking at a dark horse to make a college football playoff. And you are talking about numerous teams that could be in that situation. Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Ole Miss. I mean, there's Texas. I mean, I think all those teams could be in that situation where if you have that, how could you leave them out? Compared to other conferences, depending on what they do, of course. Michigan's on here from the Big Ten at 9.5. I'll take the under. Just, they lost so much, man. They lost so much. New coach. There's so much talent is now gone off of that team. Alabama at 9.5 wins. Do you think that's fair? That over-under of 9.5. Do you think that that's fair for Kalen DeBoer in year one at Alabama? I think it's okay. And I'll say this. I think that it's going to be tough to get to 10 wins for Alabama this year. They still have a lot of talent. They do. And DeBoer's a great coach. And I admitted yesterday that I have overlooked how good of a coach he is. But they have a tough schedule. And everybody knows that they're wounded. And everybody's coming after them. And so that's an intriguing line as well. Texas, their first year in the SEC, they're given a 10.5 win total. Their schedule's a cakewalk. We know that. It's a cakewalk, man. So we'll see how that goes. And Georgia is set at 10.5 as well. I don't think they'll have any problem. Georgia trying to get back and win another national title. We'll get Chris Gordy's thoughts on this. He's the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. We'll talk to him about win totals, schedule rankings, tournaments being expanded for the NCAA basketball tournament, and of course, how the SEC is going to win another national title in baseball. That's coming up. Chris Gordy joins us next.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, and we look forward to this conversation each and every week because, man, when this guy hops on the airwaves, he's got something to say. He's going to make some fan base mad, and we just got to figure out which one it'll be this week. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. You can find it wherever you get your audio podcast or daily on YouTube as well. Chris, great to have you on once again, man. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, man. Just getting closer to college football season. Continuing our player series. We've been having a bunch of different players on. We had the Auburn Tiger on our show this week. So it's been a lot of fun, but getting closer to start of another football season.
Yeah, we are 72 days away from Auburn getting started, sooner than that for college football in general with week zero, and it's exciting. And what's exciting, too, is the fact that 4th of July is around the corner, then SEC Media Days, and then at that point, college football is pretty much on with all of the fall practices getting going there in August. And we've got some football things to get to here later on in our conversation, but we have to start with what's been happening in Omaha and the fact that the SEC, Chris, is bringing home another national championship. We just don't know which team it's going to be just yet.
Yeah, and I don't know. Part of me depends on where you kind of fall on the rooting lines. Like, as much as it would pain me to see Tennessee win a championship at something, the Aggies can't win something. I mean, come on. Since they've been in the SEC, they've never, you know, they rarely ever win anything. I know they were celebrating, a women's tennis championship a few weeks ago, but I mean, that's basically it. They haven't won anything of significance in any of the major sports. Nothing in football, nothing in basketball. I think they made a run to the NIT championship in basketball 2 years ago.
Woo-hoo.
But, the Aggies can't be putting any more hardware, or I shouldn't say any more, can't put any hardware, period, in their trophy case. So yeah, I'm kind of rooting Tennessee. And look, you want the curse to break, right? It's been 20-something years since the number one overall seed actually won this whole thing. So it would be kind of cool. And I give a little credit to Tony Vitello. Look, he was kind of a jerk the last couple years. He likes to mouth off and get into it with people. He's kind of been tamed down this year. He's not been completely out of it, but he has very much tamed himself, maybe humbled himself even, and Tennessee's super talented. So we'll see if they get it done. But, no, look, if you're Greg Sankey in the SEC, it's a can't lose. Somebody from the SEC is winning it.
Yeah, and it could have been a combination of teams, whether it was Tennessee and Texas A&M or whether it be one of those two teams in Kentucky or even Florida, right? A Florida team that coming into postseason play was questionable to make it and then has just gotten hot and made a run through Omaha and got so hot that they were one game away from, or I guess one series away from getting into the national championship, and they took down a Kentucky team to do it. I know your wife's probably upset, Chris, that was a heck of a year for the Cats.
Yeah, it was, and I said to her last night, I said, if you're going to lose, you'd rather lose, you know, get blown out rather than, you know, lose on a heartbreaker, one-run game in the ninth inning or something. But it does suck that the weather kind of played a factor, right? I mean, they were supposed to play that game the night before, and it got pushed to yesterday morning, and, you know, Florida ended up having to play basically a doubleheader. So that kind of sucks for them. You know, you wonder maybe if they'd been, you know, had some rest, maybe they might have had a better chance. But regardless, like I said, we'll see what happens here. The thing that I like, though, Jacob, is regardless of who wins it, we're going to crown another different champion from the SEC. And that's what's so cool is, you know, when you took, you know, go back the last handful of years, you know, Vanderbilt wins it, then COVID hits, and then Mississippi State wins it, and then Ole Miss wins it, and then LSU wins it, and now either Tennessee or A&M is going to win it. I mean, it's one thing to say you've won, you know, 5-6 straight championships in a row. It's another thing to say they were all different schools. I think that's really cool. And, you know, just speaks to the parity of the SEC and how, you know, every year it's somebody different from this league winning it all. It's just, it shows that's how dominant the conference is.
And the question then becomes, right, Chris, I mean, how long can it keep up? I mean, how long can this streak of new SEC teams, but really just SEC teams winning national championships, and it's no secret how dominant this conference is and getting better with Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, I think this can go on for quite some time, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, look, it's going to get a little bit tougher next year. You're going to welcome Texas and Oklahoma to the party, and, you know, I'll see what Oklahoma looks like. Texas, you know, has been pretty competitive, although there's some rumblings maybe they could move on from David Pierce, but we'll see what happens there. But they were a postseason team this year. And then, you know, South Carolina, it's kind of been down. They're getting a championship coach at Paul Maneri. Now, I don't know how many years Paul's going to plan to be there, but, you know, he's 66 years old. But, you know, if he can give them 3-4 good years, you know, South Carolina's back in the running. So, you know, and then you got the other schools that have been knocking on the door. Arkansas came so close years ago, and, you know, Dave Van Horn is a Hall of Fame coach. Eventually, he's going to break through and get one, you have to think. And, you know, who knows? Maybe somebody else. I know Alabama was on the rise this year. You know, see what Butch Thompson could do with the day and age of NIL in Auburn, if they could start getting some kids over there. So, we'll, you know, we'll see what happens. But, no, I think it's awesome. This is what – I always tell people, this is what football felt like in, like, the late 2000s, when it was like,
yeah,
hey, LSU won one. Hey, you know, Florida won two. And then, hey, LSU won another. And Auburn won one. And then, you know, and Alabama won. And then it wasn't fun when it was Alabama, Alabama, Alabama. You're like, wait, no, we were all taking turns. This is supposed to be fun. And that's kind of what happened in football. But, you know, who knows? Maybe baseball might go that way. Maybe, you know, maybe if A&M or Tennessee wins this, maybe Tennessee wins three of the next four or something.
Yeah, and then, you know, teams like Ohio State and Clemson had to jump in and really just ruin the party for the SEC in college football.
It got so bad, though, there, Jacob, but it got to a point, like, you know, like I said, that 09 championship with Bama, I was like, oh, okay, cool, root for the SEC. But, like, by the second time they were playing Clemson, I'm rooting for Clemson because I'm like, the hell with Alabama. I hope Trevor Lawrence torches them.
Yeah, and so was everybody in this town and on this part of the state. I could promise you that. Lots to be excited about in the college baseball world for the SEC. That series between A&M and Tennessee will get going on Saturday. Are you predicting Tennessee to win that one, Chris?
Yeah, it's funny. My prediction when this whole thing started a couple weeks ago, I said I said I was picking Tennessee versus A&M in the final, and I picked Tennessee to win it all. So
okay,
again, history not on their side. The one seed, never wins it. So we'll see what happens. But I will say I do like Jim Schlossnagel a lot. I had him on. We had him on Locked On SEC when he got hired at A&M. He was a tremendous head coach in his years at TCU and really, really good guy. Easy guy to root for. And so if he were to win it, I would root for him, but I would not root for the Aggies.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I'm just glad I'm glad you've made that known for the A&M fans. And there's the question, or there's the answer to the question, ladies and gentlemen. It's A&M, the fans that he's going to be make mad today. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He's with me every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7. I'm sure you saw the news today about the NCAA sending out a proposal to Division I commissioners and conference commissioners to try and expand the NCAA basketball tournament again. They're talking 72, possibly 76. I mean, I think it's absurd. I think it's outlandish, but I also think and know why they're doing it. Your thoughts on a possibility of the NCAA basketball tournament expanding for the men and the women's tournaments moving forward?
Yeah, it's silly. This thing is so stupid. We've got, I thought it was stupid when we went from 64 to 68. I mean, the first four, nobody gives a damn. Like, nobody cares about it. It's, that's foolish. And it's foolish to say that we're going to expand even more. I mean, it gets to a point, and I had to go back and look at the SEC standings at the end of the year, because this all goes back to Greg Sankey, say, oh, we need more SEC teams in it. We're expanding our conference by two teams. And so if the SEC only gets five or six bids, that's not enough. It's like, okay, well, that's on you. But we're not going to boot out the mid-majors just because you expanded your conference. Like, the SEC is a power conference in everything except men's basketball. I'm sorry, they just haven't been. They haven't won enough titles. SEC dominated every other sport except for men's college basketball. And so, when Greg Sankey's like, well, we need more of our teams in, it's like, okay, well, let's go look at the standings last year. You're really going to make a case for a Georgia team that finished sub 500 in the conference? Like, I'm sorry, you don't automatically get to punch a ticket. You have to earn your way in. And so that's where I say, like, yeah, if you're in the top five, six teams in the SEC, you punch your ticket. But, like, you got to earn it. This can't be this thing where it's like everybody gets in. And, it's like everybody gets a trophy thing. It's like, no, you have to earn your way into the tournament. And even if you finish sub 500 in the regular season in the SEC, you know what else you can do? You can go win the SEC conference tournament and punch your ticket that way. Like, you have multiple ways to get in. So I just think it's absolutely stupid. I think – we're messing with a good thing, and, everybody loves the NCAA tournament, and not one person in the world is saying, what, we need to change this. We need to, this could be perfected a little bit better. No, it's fine. Leave it as it is. But, again, money and greed rules all, and that's why they're going to head down this road, and we're going to add more teams, and it's going to be stupid. I mean, it's already super long. Like, how long did it take us to get UConn in the championship game? It felt like it took forever.
Yeah.
And, now it's... now this thing's basically going to be like a month and a half in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's over 3 weeks long now. I mean, they start middle of March around the 15th, and you're playing the national championship game on that first Monday of April. And it just continues to take longer and longer. And I was saying in the first hour of the show today, what business does the 76th best team in college basketball have to compete for a national championship? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean – To your point, it's called March Madness for a reason, yet we're playing the championship games in April. Like, I went back and looked at Georgia, went 6-12 in the SEC this year. It's like, really want to make a case that they belong in the tournament? Like,
hey, they made a run in the NIT. They made a run in the NIT.
Yeah, but again, like, you gotta prove it in the regular season. I mean, like, okay, you finished 500 in the conference, fine, but, like, there's been no SEC dominance for Greg Sankey to stand on and go, oh, we deserve, 10 teams in the tournament. I just think it's silly. You're called a conference for a reason. Everybody's playing everybody. So win more games than you lose. It's very simple, and you'll get into the tournament.
I mean, do you feel that this could I mean, I think because they sent it out to all of the commissioners of Division I conferences. I mean, this is a no-brainer for smaller conferences too, right? To give them any sort of chance of getting two teams in rather than just their conference champion?
Yeah, I guess in theory, but again, I think this is largely motivated by the larger conferences, particularly like I said, the SEC and the Big Ten, who are expanding their conferences and adding more teams, they want more tickets to punch to the tournament. So I hope that happens, Jacob. I hope this thing backfires on them and we get more, you know, more teams from the Sun Belt and from the, I don't know, the Ivy League and things like that. I mean, yeah. I would love that. But again, that's not why they're doing this. They're doing this to appease the big money power conferences, and the SEC is included in that. So as much as I'd love to say, yeah, this will just be, you know, the four or eight teams that were, you know, the first four out or whatever, I don't know if it's going to be that simple.
Hmm. Well, we shall see. I mean, I'm with you. I'm sure it will be voted in. I'm sure it will be voted in by most. And you'll see the NCAA tournament for men's and women's. They did go on to say in the reports and the articles today that if they accepted it for the men's, it would most likely be accepted in the women's side of things as well. And, you know, we just got to wait and see. And you said it, and I say it all the time, money rules all. And when you can add more teams, you add more games, and more money gets thrown around. And we know that's the motivation for most things in sports nowadays, as we are talking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. On the show yesterday, Chris, we ranked our easiest to toughest schedules for the SEC in college football this upcoming season. And to kind of put you on the spot a little bit, I'm sure you don't have all 16 of them memorized, but I know you've looked at them here a few times since they've been released and as the season is upcoming. There was a few that I had on my list that I kind of stood out to me. I think that Ole Miss and Missouri have two of the easiest schedules in college football and in the SEC this season. I think Auburn has an easier schedule than they've seen in the past, right there middle of the pack. And then Florida and Oklahoma have two of the tougher schedules in the country this season around the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, it's about right. You know, Florida, I think everybody hands down agrees that theirs is the most brutal. You know, Arkansas for about 2 or 3 years straight had the toughest one, and I think theirs is still tough, but it got a little bit easier. You know, and yeah, and Missouri and Ole Miss, sure, that probably had the easiest draw of anybody because, you know, they it's not to say they don't have tough games on the schedule, but, you know, I keep looking at Ole Miss and saying, all right, their two toughest games are, you know, home against Georgia and at LSU, and even if they lose both of those games, they're going to go 10-2 and they're in the playoffs. So, you know, it's almost like you're rewarded by playing a crappy schedule. I've brought this up before. Michigan was rewarded last year for playing a crappy non-conference.
Yeah.
Michigan opened the year with like ECU and Bowling Green and I don't know, East Auburn Technology College. I don't know. You know, it was like the softest schedule you've ever seen. And yet at the end of the year, all the selection committee did was, well, they went, you ran the table in the Big Ten, so you automatically get a seat at the table. You move to the front of the line. It's like, you know, and then you had a Florida State that actually had some tougher non-conference games. They beat Florida in the Swamp, and again, you know, Florida's not great, but that still is an SEC team. And then they played LSU on a neutral field in week one and beat them. So Florida State had two SEC non-conference wins on this schedule, and the committee went, nope, not impressive enough, and they left them out because they said, you won the ACC, and we didn't think it was that tough. But Michigan won the Big Ten, and we thought that was tough. So, again, like, I don't even know why you go out and schedule tough non-conference games. LSU, Brian Kelly is just so clueless. Like, they're opening with USC in Las Vegas on a neutral field, a potential loss. And then 2-3 weeks later, they're playing UCLA in Baton Rouge. Why you would schedule both those games in the same season is silly. And I say all this to come back around. The Ole Miss's toughest non-conference this year is at Wake Forest. Like, they open with Furman. And, I mean, again, it's a joke of a non-conference schedule. So, again, Ole Miss is going to get rewarded not going out and scheduling any tough non-conference games, getting the softest schedule, you know, one of the softest schedules in the SEC. And even if they do lose their two toughest games, they still go 10-2 and they'll make the playoffs. So it's, everybody tries to say, you know, oh, it's the best conference and all this, but the SEC has had a scheduling problem for years and years and years. When I used to say there were years, you know, in the East-West rotation where LSU's permanent opponent was Florida, where Florida was always tough. Even in their down years, it was tough to play in the Swamp. And there were years where LSU would pull Florida and Georgia from the East, and Bama, with their permanent crossover, Tennessee, you know, there were those years where Tennessee was god-awful. Bama, basically, there were some years they would get Tennessee and Vandy in the East. And it was like, okay, these schedules are not created equal. They have a cakewalk. And schools like LSU and Auburn had to, you know, like, Auburn has to play Bama and Georgia every year. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many more pitfalls there. And so I just say all that to say I don't like, you know, I wish they would go to the nine-game conference schedule.
Yeah.
And then the even rotation where you can, you know, everybody's schedules, you'll have years where it's hard, they'll have years where it's easier. But even on top of it, like next year, we already know in 2025 you're going to keep the same opponents, just home and away is going to flip. So for Ole Miss and Missouri, congrats. Your easy schedule stays easy for two straight years.
It's ridiculous, and I'm with you. I think the nine-game schedule is necessary. You dump one of those non-conference games that doesn't matter for Auburn, you know, the Alabama A&Ms of the world, where, yes, you pay them money and those schools need it, but, I mean, I think there's just a lot more to it than that. And so with that, right, the conversation in college basketball, and I'm going to let you go. I know we're up against the time and everything, but in college basketball, right, it's all about scheduling big-name teams so you get better and it's going to benefit you come March in the NCAA tournament. You don't really have that conversation in football. Like, nobody's talking about how LSU is going to benefit from playing UCLA in week four. It's what you said. It's like, why in the heck are you playing UCLA in week four? It's just kind of a weird double standard there.
Well, yeah, and they said that they were going to consider that moving forward, especially because it's a 12-team playoff. So, you know, if you have three SEC teams that are all 10-2, and, you know, LSU had a close loss against USC, and USC is a top 10 team at the end of the country, you know, you would think that maybe they would give them the benefit of the doubt, but I just don't think they will, because we saw last year, they just do whatever the hell they want. They decided, you know, on their own, accord that Michigan was in no matter what. And that, we're not going to fault them for their non-conference. And then on top of it, Alabama, I know they lost by double digits at home to Texas, but they just beat Georgia, so they have to be in because it's Big Saban. You know, and then the Florida State, yeah, they're undefeated, and yeah, they beat two SEC teams, but, oh, their quarterback got hurt, so we're just going to take them out. It's just like, again, they just do whatever the hell they want. They use whatever criteria is convenient to them to make the argument for what teams they want in.
Period. Period. That's exactly right. And it's unfortunate, but it's how it goes. And we know it, and we just got to live with it in terms of what happens in the end of college football seasons. Chris, we got to let you go, man, but we appreciate you as always. You're with us every Thursday at this time here on ESPN 106.7. We're getting closer to SEC Media Days, closer to the start of the college football season. Tell people where they can find Locked On SEC and what you got coming up.
Yeah, just search Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcasts. And for Auburn fans out there, we had Jason Jones on the show this week, the Big D lineman, and a really good, you know, 20, 30-minute conversation with him about the upcoming season. We kind of broke down all the different parts of the defense. So if you're an Auburn fan, definitely check it out, Locked On SEC.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for your time. As always, we'll get with you next week, all right?
All right, man. Sounds good.
That's Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, the podcast. Go find it wherever you get your podcast. We have gone way past. I got to get to a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up very quickly here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Been a lot of fun today. Went real long with Chris Gordy, but it's always a pleasure talking with him. And we talked about the College World Series. We talked about the NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament trying to be expanded, and then some good scheduling conversation as well. I've had a lot of fun today. We've talked about, the tournament being expanded for college basketball, the proposal that was sent out for that, and really the inevitability that it's going to be expanded. Also, I looked into a couple of other things as well, looked at the win totals for SEC Big Ten teams according to FanDuel. So lots that we went over on the show today. If you missed any of it, all right, you can go and listen to the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. It's going to be posted after the show today, and so be sure you go and catch up with that. I'll be back tomorrow, all right? It's you and me again, but we're going to have a couple of good interviews tomorrow. Nick Kleiner, the Auburn men's golf coach, coming off a national championship. Ben Taylor sat down with him. We'll have that interview for you. Also, Britt Bowen will be joining us, the voice of Auburn women's basketball and Auburn softball. He'll be joining us to talk about the new co-head coaches for softball and some of the new additions on the women's basketball team, a program on the rise. So Britt Bowen will join us on the show tomorrow. Plus, it's Free for All Friday. Who knows what we're going to get into on the show tomorrow. I'll be back 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.